And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
13 to neighbors, 7 before that. Here's a run again by Dart. First and 10. He'll take it in. His first career touchdown. And the Giants on top.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today it's Wednesday, October 1st. This is episode 196. I'm Gino. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. As usual, please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. We're all over the place. Join our pages. See what we got to say. If you don't like something we got to say, then tell us that. If you like something we got to say, then say it. Tell us that. Tonight, we're talking NFL football, college football. But first, we're going to do a little update on where we are with baseball, Yankees, wild card round. We're going to get into it right now. So Yankees, 1-1. Lost last night 3-1. They actually came up with a win tonight 4-3 to force game three. In fact, we have three game threes coming your way tomorrow. Detroit won yesterday, Cleveland today. Chicago won yesterday, San Diego today. Yankees, Boston yesterday, Yankees today. So all three have split. We got three game threes. Dodgers won last night. Game two is underway as we speak. Where do we want to start? We want to start with last night. So,
yeah, G, why don't you kick us off on this one?
So, listen, a lot of things I didn't like last night. I'm going to start right off the bat with the lineup. I want my team on the field. Okay. No Jazz Chisholm and no Ben Rice. Why? Why no Jazz? Why no Rice? Okay. You just took 57 home runs out of the lineup last night. Okay, I don't need, I know some of these guys have better numbers against lefties. Some of them don't hit lefties very well. I don't care. Okay? You can't take the guys out of the lineup that got you there. I can't stand when they do it at any point. I say the same thing about the pitching. I don't care. I don't care about the righty-lefty bullshit. I don't care that Rosario was 6-for-9 against Crochet in the past. He was 0-for-3 last night. Didn't matter. Okay. And then if you're going to put Rosario in the lineup, it's not for Jazz Chisholm. I'm sorry. It can't be. I hate the way Boone does this. It can't happen. All right. The move last night was who you wanted at third base. Was it Caballero? Was it McMahon? Or do you want Rosario in the lineup? That's it. And honestly, I can't stand not having Rice in this lineup. And you tell me Goldschmidt's got numbers? Play Rice behind the plate. Okay, Wells is a lefty also. So Wells against Crochet does nothing for me either. So do I want Rice against the lefty? Or do I want Wells against the lefty? And the answer is I want Rice against the lefty. So it just drives me freaking crazy. Jazz against the right-hander for the season hit 240 against the lefty at 248. Okay. His power is down against the lefty. I get it. He had 25 from the right-hand side, 6 from the left-hand side. I don't care. Okay. And Rice, you sat Rice. He had 7 home runs and hit 208. Wells had 6 home runs and hit 240. It's not like the guy hit 350. I can't stand it. And to sit these guys at this time and take them out of the lineup, and then what it does, it also does is it changes your lineup for the game, because then you're not putting the guy in until there's a righty. And if they go to a lefty, then you're not putting them in. And if, you know, the whole thing with Chapman, so then he didn't want to put him in against Chapman. The whole thing's ridiculous. Now, the other part to this is, if you are going with Rosario in this game, at least Boone have the insight to understand that Chapman is going to come in this game. Okay? So you took him out. You pulled. It was like he couldn't wait to pull Rosario out of the game to bring Jazz in. And then 2 innings later, Jazz is up against the lefty anyway. So what did you accomplish? Again, if you're leaving him in there because he hits lefties amazingly, which he does, he kills lefties, then at least have the foresight to understand what you're doing. Okay. And this is all before the game started. Okay. You want to get into the game? Is there a reason why we have to pull Max Fried out? Is there a reason after getting an out in the seventh, he gets an out? It's not like he gave up a base hit. It's not like he gave up a hard hit triple to left center. No, he gets the guy to ground to first base. Leave him in. I don't know what the rush is to pull these pitchers. As soon as they hit the damn 100 pitch mark, that's it. They yanked. It was ridiculous. And listen, I thought the inning before, I thought Fried had run out of gas. I really did. But you made the choice to bring him in to start the seventh. Let him give up a hit before you pull him. Darren?
I'm going to start with moron number one. Okay, it's a three-game series, right? Why the fuck is Paul Blackburn on this roster and I don't have Slater, okay? Now, I have Grisham, who looked lost all night last night, and he's going to bat with the bases loaded and two outs. They're not going to go to Dominguez. Maybe you go to Slater. Why the F do I have Paul Blackburn on? What are we expecting a 10-3 game that we're trying to save the pen? Because I have Will Warren for that. I have a guy that's already not going to pitch. I already have that guy. Why would you have – so moron number one has to understand that Paul Blackburn can't be on this roster. Kev, am I wrong in a three-game set of saying we don't need that guy? Tell me I'm wrong.
I was curious, who they wind up bringing. And, when you look at the roster, the second name on the roster because of the alphabetical order, Paul Blackburn, I said, you've got to be shitting me. Paul Blackburn is in the playoff roster?
If I had hair, it would have been pulled out. It's gone. But if I had
nobody else better. There's nobody else.
Warren to pitch that role. I have Luis Gil to pitch that role. I don't need the white flag in a three-game series. I don't. It just doesn't have to happen. So, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to say – same thing you said before, Gino, about Chisholm. You sit there and try to protect him against a lefty that you have a better shot at than the overpowering, humongous Chapman. Okay, where Grisham looks scared, and Jazz, he's not the guy you want to step in against. He's just not. He's huge. You just can't do it, right? So he pulls Rosario like for defense, and down and does that. So you're like, what the hell? Volpe, by the way, the only guy that really hit. Judge had a couple singles. Stanton was the guy that disappointed you. The guy we all said that was going to be great. Left five runners on scoring position last night. Didn't do well again tonight. Stunned by that. Bases loaded, nobody out there, couldn't do anything. As far as Fried goes, he hustled to first base, had tons of energy to beat the runner on the throw. It wasn't like he was laboring, tired, or didn't have it in him. You let him – it's 8-9 coming up. 8-9-1, right? I mean, let him pitch. There's no reason. You're rushing to pitch a guy that had a 9.82 ERA in September. We got to bring him in now. We got to go to Weaver. Oh, God, we can't waste the opportunity to bring in Weaver. We want to put him in a soft spot. This is the playoffs. There is no soft spot. Everybody remembers the Tim Loud, the Buck 90 fan club. There is no soft spot in the playoffs. Everybody can hit. Everybody gets hot. Scott Brosius wins MVPs. Things happen in the playoffs. Todd Zeal never made an out for the Mets in the playoffs, even if he struggled during the season. There's certain guys that just step up. Ray Knight hits, 12 homers in the first 2 months, one homer the rest of the way, and then he was on fire in the playoffs. Everything happens in the playoffs. There's no soft spot. But you're going to tell me you're going to race to bring in Weaver? Listen, Weaver was great last year. Luke Weaver was great last year. He hasn't had it, all right? He just hasn't had it. He doesn't locate. And he gives up runs, but you bring that guy in. He loses the 10 pitch at bat, and the game was basically over right there.
Yeah.
They're running on Judge because they know he can't throw, and he's not willing to throw. He's not willing to hurt himself. And so they took extra bases. Sogard looked like he was, Bob Hayes running out there. I mean, it was like unbelievable watching Sogard run the bases. But I had problems with the lineup. Gino texted me right away, and I saw it right before he texted me. And he's just like, where is Chisholm? And I'm like, I know Rosario's at 6-9. I thought they'd play him at third. I thought that they would play Chisholm no matter what. And I thought they would play Rice over Wells. And I thought Rice would catch. That's what I thought. I thought Goldschmidt would play.
So I did I.
So I thought that, but they, he went out of his way. And to be honest, I probably would have started Caballero and Volpe's the only guy that drove in a run. So I would have been wrong on that. So, but at the same time, I just don't get the
style
of this team, G.
One correction. So, do up that inning was a 7-8-9, by the way.
Oh, 7-8. No, so it was Rafaela was eight. He was coming.
It was Duran, Rafaela, and Sogard, 7-8-9 coming up.
He beat Duran to the bag, Kev. He beat Duran to the bag. It's not like he beat me to the bag. He beat Jaron Duran to the bag. The guy that leads the league in triples. The guy that runs like a deer. Kev, thoughts as an independent observer that might be rooting for the Yankees and just loves watching baseball?
It was the stupidest move I've seen in a season full of stupid moves by New York baseball managers. What do you say to this guy? Oh, we might get to the World Series and he needs seven starts. We have to watch out and save him. And he threw 102 pitches. What type of reason is that?
There is no reason.
Like you said, he's your stud. He's your ace. We said it on our preview show. The Yankees are the one team in this series, in this postseason, that needs seven from their starter, especially Fried, especially their ace. And he was fine to go out there. If you want to take it batter for batter at that point, fine. You know, if he gives up a hard hit double, you think about pulling him. A soft single, you leave him in there.
But there wasn't a hard hit ball the whole night, by the way.
There wasn't.
A hard hit ball the whole night against him.
If he started the seventh and retires Duran to start the seventh, why are you taking him out? There is no need to take him out.
None.
You need to win game one. You had a chance there to win game one and beat Crochet and set it up to take care of the Red Sox in two. Because I said it on the preview. I said Crochet start was the one game that I was afraid of that the Yankees would lose. And they didn't lose because of Fried. Crochet pitched a great game.
He lost a great game.
Boone was too fast to go to that bullpen.
Yeah. Listen.
And Crochet was great, by the way. He was outstanding.
Phenomenal start by Crochet. And he's a guy that wanted to be out there, who was not coming out.
Yeah.
And you know, the manager basically said, you know, yeah, we're leaving him in there.
Darren, did we need to see the entire bullpen yesterday? Ready? Fried, 102 pitches, followed by Weaver for 15 pitches, followed by Cruz for 14 pitches, followed by Williams for 11 pitches, Bednar for 15 pitches, and Hill for 4. Fried pitched into the seventh inning. Which means they only pitched 2 2/3 innings with 5 pitches.
8 outs.
And nobody
can outs to get.
The problem is now everyone has to come back. They have to pitch 3 days in a row.
That's it.
I mean, listen, I was saying it to Gino before. I mean, the fact that you're late racing for Luke Weaver is just what drives you nuts because he just hasn't been good. You'll laugh. I'm a Cruz guy. And that would be the second guy I trust most in the pen. More so than even Devin Williams, because we saw what his stones are like in the game against the Mets last year in the playoffs. Yeah. He just doesn't have it, right? So I trust Cruz because he seems like he's ready for the moment. He misses bats. He does things I like. But now you have to pitch all these guys 3 days in a row.
Well, let's pause. So that was game one. Game two today. They wound up winning 4-3. A close game came to the eighth inning. Wells hits an RBI to drive in Jazz in the eighth inning. They take the lead. They go up 4-3, and Bednar closes it out in the ninth. Rodon for 6. He was good. Cruz pitched 1, got out of a great jam there. Devin Williams pitched 1. Bednar pitched 1. On the other side, you know, the Red Sox went through their entire pen. Everybody jumped in. Bello pitched 2 1/3. Wilson, Slatten, Matz, Kelly, Whitlock, and Toll. Everybody pitched. So, you know, everybody but Chapman.
Only what's his name pitched last at? Only Chapman.
Right.
So Crochet, what he did was he allowed everybody to be rested, which was huge. The one thing, and I said it on our little social media post, Cora's playing chess while Boone's playing checkers. Okay. It's what? Like it's like the biggest mismatch out there. Like he knew that he was gonna go lefty to lefty and not and force the Yankees to not let their left-handed bats bat in game one. And he did it.
Yep.
Boone just had no idea how to counter him. He looks overmatched.
He does.
He clearly overmatched by putting Blackburn in there. I mean, this is like it was a masterclass of managing by Cora. It really was last night. He rode him until he had enough, 117, which, listen, you know, by today's standards is humongous. You know, Coney's doing the game. Guys, you still like 160 in these settings. Walk you on purpose without putting walks on there. Just make you just walk, just load him up until he got the guy he wanted to face. Totally different style of baseball, but back in the day. But last night you had the power pitcher against the pitcher. And Fried's a pitcher, and Fried did everything you could ask. And his postseason hadn't been great his career, and he did everything right. And you know, Boone did everything he could to lose the game, and he did it. Congratulations, Aaron Boone. Now we go to game three, and if it comes to a managerial decision, you got to trust Boston more than you trust New York. I think we have a superior lineup with Roman Anthony not in there, and the guys had a slump.
Battle of two rookies tomorrow night, Connor Early and Cam Schlittler. So it should be interesting. I don't
know if either goes beyond four tomorrow. I'd be stunned if we see that, unless somebody's really dealing.
Well, we'll see.
You got to figure Heel and Schlittler. I mean, Heel's ready to come in for Schlittler there
right away,
early.
Yeah, I would think so, Kev.
You could even have Warren up if you needed to. I mean, you could go to any one of those guys, and they're all righties. Doesn't really matter. But you know, I see that, and I think Boston the same thing. So they went to Wilson as one of their guys. They went to him in the third inning. You know, so they wanted to sweep it. They didn't want to play game three.
No.
Now we'll see what happens. Reds jump out 2-0, so we'll see what happens there too, right?
Yeah. Drop fly ball by Teoscar out in right field.
Yeah, the gold glove of Teoscar Hernandez.
Hands of stone.
All right. Any other baseball points before we jump over to college football?
I got some buried treasures, but we're gonna do them later.
The managers let go since the end of the season. Twins let go of Rocco Baldelli. Rangers get rid of Bruce Bochy decides not to come back to the Rangers. Braves, Brian Snicker leaves. Interesting thing. The Braves have had three managers since 1990. Wow. Cox, Freddie Gonzalez, and Snicker.
Wow.
Giants get rid of Bob Melvin. Posey's already said Bochy's not the candidate there. And the Angels got rid of Ron Washington, and strong rumors Albert Pujols is the leading candidate there.
Should be interesting.
Yep.
Okay. Any other baseball?
That's it. I got baseball treasures, but we'll do them later. But you want to do any gems before we go into the next segment, Kev?
Well, we'll save them for a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Darren, let's talk about college football.
Okay, this is going to be an interesting one because we're going to recap a few games here. It was a great weekend of college football. And then we'll talk about this week's games, which is not a great weekend of college football. So just going to do quick. Kev, jump in where you need to.
Yep.
Last Friday, we start. Virginia upsets Florida State. Think Florida State's probably looking a little bit past them, but a great game by Virginia. Florida State fought back in this one. Virginia played really well. I think
they said that was a tricky Miami spot.
What was that?
That was a tricky spot there for Florida State. We said that on the preview last week.
And the thing about Virginia is they're 45 seconds away from being 5-0. They lost late to NC State. So this team is resurgent now. Puts them in like a conversation right now. They're going to have to win a couple road games to be taken seriously, but it puts them in the conversation. The other Friday night game was Arizona State coming back on TCU 27-24. TCU led 17-0 in this game. ASU tied it up at 24 with a minute 50 left. TCU then fumbled. Arizona State kicked the field goal at 111 left to take the lead. And TCU's fourth quarter drives. Four drives, 13 plays, 3 yards, 2 punts, a fumble, and a pick. So TCU was probably the better team throughout the night. Just couldn't hold on to this one, Kev. Just one of those games. Georgia Tech Wake, you had this one, Kev. I didn't think it was going to be a game. This game ends up 30-29 in overtime. And the refs gave the game to Georgia Tech. I don't know if you guys saw it. Georgia Tech clearly jumps offside on a 3rd-and-5 with a minute 52 to go with no timeouts left. So the quarterback throws it up to try to get the first down, just a free play. Only problem is they didn't throw the flag. So then the clock stops at 1:48, and Wake Forest has to punt it. Georgia Tech comes back down, ties it up, go to overtime. Georgia Tech scores first. Wake ties it. Wake matches it, goes for two for the win as the weaker squad get picked off. Wake showed a lot in this game, and they really did get hosed by the refs, not just a fan. They actually got hosed by the refs in this one. They missed an offside call that would have given them a first down, and they would have probably punted back with like 12 seconds left in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Tech deserves some credit for rallying from 20-3. Again, Haynes King, 243 passing, 106 rushing, 3 total touchdowns. Still fun to watch.
He's an awesome player. Notre Dame 56, Arkansas 13. Only reason you remember this, mention this, is because Arkansas was embarrassed. Pittman got fired right after the game, as did the entire defensive coaching staff. This is in Fayetteville. This can't happen. Notre Dame looked amazing. Arkansas, Pittman's been, you were surprised he came back this year. Now he's gone. Illinois 34, USC 32. Illinois kind of controlled this game. Then USC came back late, took the lead. Illinois hits the field goal at the gun to win it 34-32. To say that we're not as bad as we looked against Indiana, USC now has a loss on their ledger, Kev.
Huge bounce back from 63-10.
Absolutely. Ole Miss pretty much dominated LSU. The score won't say that. 24-19 final. 480 yards to 254 yards in this game. Ole Miss is for real. And, Lane Kiffin has this team jumping and rolling and playing really, really well right now, Kev.
Yeah, it's 2 turnovers, 14 penalties for 109 yards by Ole Miss. That pretty much kept LSU in the game.
Yeah, because they dominated the game. Chambliss, again,
did outstanding. 2-1 in yards.
Oh, outstanding. We'll talk about domination in the close game. Texas A&M dominated Auburn 16-10. Auburn had 9 first downs and 177 total yards, only lost by 6 in this one. Texas A&M also kept them around a little bit in this one.
Yeah, 2 missed field goals, both were long, 15-49.
Yeah, but you got to expect you hit one of them, and then Darren gets the 7.5-point cover. But so, no.
As would I on 6.5 points in our picks last week.
I went up, but I didn't get it. Indiana, Iowa, speaking of spreads, Gino. Indiana was up 20-13 late. They took a 38-yard safety. He ran through, and the spread was 6.5 in this game. So if you had Indiana laying 7 feeling really good about yourself, you lost because he took a 38-yard safety. He could have just thrown it up in the air and let the clock run out that way, but instead they gave Iowa the points. Tennessee, Mississippi State, 41-34. State's for real.
Yeah.
They showed up. They actually played really, really well. Tennessee tied it late and won it in overtime. It was a well-played game. It really was.
It was just a fun, well-played back-and-forth game. Nobody had a big lead. It was no big rally. It was just offense back-and-forth.
Two teams going at each other. The two big ones, okay, both on Saturday night. We start in Happy Valley, which was our feature game. Oregon 30, Penn State 24 in double overtime. Oregon was the better team in this game throughout. Dante Moore looked unbelievable to me in this game. Drew Allen struggled early, but then down 17-3, they scored 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns, tie it up. And the last one was with 30 seconds left. They go for one. I kind of agree with it. The momentum was on their side. I agree with going for one. They each scored. Each score in the first overtime, and then Allen gets picked on the first play in the second overtime. Oregon gets stopped on the 2-point conversion. You're thinking Penn State has a shot. Allen gets picked in the double in the second overtime on the first play. Oregon 414 yards, Penn State 276. James Franklin, program builder. Is he a coach that gets you over the top, Kev? He's got to start to question it because they're not winning these games at home that they have to freaking win. Last year, Ohio State. This year, Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, first off, this whiteout stuff, what are they, about 13-7, I think, against
– Yeah, they don't win with them.
I mean, come on. And then Franklin is, what's the record? 5-20?
Yeah.
So against the top 10 teams?
4-21, actually. It was 4-20 going in, and then he lost.
4-21.
I think it's 4-21, or maybe 5-20. I thought it was 4-21, but either way.
You talked about bad beats, though. Over-under was about 53.
Yep.
And this was a 3-3 game at halftime, 17-3 game in the fourth. If you have the under, you're thinking golden.
That's what overtime does to you in college football. And it would probably turn out to be the other cold game of the day. Alabama, for the 10th time in 11 tries, beats Georgia. 24-21, they stopped Georgia on downs late in the third at the Bama 8. Then they found a way in the fourth. They ran out the clock, completed a 3rd-and-5. Ty Simpson has looked really good. Bama had the ball like 36 minutes in this game. They were the better team, Kev. They just were better than Georgia. in Sanford Stadium under the lights on a Saturday night. It was stunning to me how easily they kind of controlled this one.
They controlled, especially the first half. It was 24-14 at halftime. Georgia did a good job of controlling them in the second half. And Georgia had that big decision. Smart on 4th-and-1 at the 11 in the fourth quarter. It was early. They were down by 3. He eschews the field goal attempt, goes for on 4th-and-1, and they lose 3 on the handoff. Yep.
And that was it. And that was the recap of last week. Why don't you tell us about Willie Bryce here? Because I know you were there last week. I mean, I know South Carolina's not ranked, but it's a fun experience for you, Kevy.
Oh, as always, it's the 4th annual trip down to South Carolina. Visit my son and go to Willie B to watch South Carolina. We purposely picked this game because we figured Kentucky on the schedule looked like it was a winnable game. We're not fools. And, early on, Kentucky did a great job of using their speed to get the outside, took the early lead. And then the second quarter, back-to-back drives, a pick six and a scoop and score off a sack. And all of a sudden, two quick defensive touchdowns, and South Carolina dominated the rest of the game.
And they were just a better team.
They were much better on a Saturday night. Still the offensive line gives up way too much pressure. Sellers is fun to watch. When he's healthy and playing well, God, can he make plays scrambling?
Yeah. Hell of a player. Might be the first pick in the draft this year, they're saying.
Yep.
Definitely
top three.
Any other recaps for before we get into this week's games?
No, that was it.
Okay. There's not a lot to watch this week, so you're reaching for a couple of these, okay? So these are the big games of the week, G, because there's not a ton of them. Number 14, Iowa State heads to Cincinnati, okay? Iowa State's undefeated. Cincinnati has one loss, and they just won at Kansas. So this will be a litmus test if Iowa State's really for real winning a road game and a good Cincinnati team. The number 24, Virginia, goes to undefeated Louisville. They're actually a 6.5-point dog in this game, despite the fact that they're the ranked team in this. We're going to find out if Virginia can win on the road or if they're just one of those teams that takes things at home. Boise State at Notre Dame. Neither one of these teams have great records, but the Irish cannot afford a third loss if they plan on making the college football playoff. So this is a must-win for Notre Dame against a pretty good Boise State team.
Not as good as it's been in the last few years, but still a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little crazy. We got number 3 Miami at number 18 Florida State. This was probably the game we were thinking was going to be the game of the week, correct? And then all of a sudden Florida State loses this one. But this is still a rough one in Tallahassee. If you watch football, college football in the late 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, this was the rivalry of rivalries. This was wide right, a lot of misses by Florida State, a lot of blown opportunities and chances. And now we get to see these two teams, really with this team ranked as high as I've seen them ranked, Miami as a 3. This is going to be an intense game.
Probably since the Jimmy Johnson days, it feels like going back to there.
No doubt about it. And then the big one, right? I mean, I guess, is there any other one you want to talk about before I get to the B?
Gino. I'm sorry. You got one? Texas at Florida.
Florida's 1-3. We could call it big. It's still a road game for Texas. They have to win. Arch has to win on the road.
It's a road game. Florida, though, 33 points in the last 3 games. That's been their big problem.
They can't score.
They can't score. And Houston at home versus Texas Tech. I think Texas Tech is in a little tricky spot, too, on the road. That can be a closer game than people realize.
I just think they're a lot better. If they can win at Utah, I think they can win at Houston. But that's just me. But I get your point. And then, Gino, we have the big one. Saturday afternoon, 3:30. We go to Bryant-Denny Stadium. Okay, we go to a matchup that any of us who watch college football. Now, Kevin and I follow it more than you, but Gino, you know that how often are the Vanderbilt Commodores ever in the game of the week?
Not often.
They're showing up in Bryant-Denny. Yes, Kev?
And we were talking Monday night about this, so which game are we going to do? Maybe even Sunday night. And we both agreed on, let's do Vandy in Alabama. ESPN thinks enough of it. They're there for game day Saturday morning.
Absolutely. So you have two teams. One's undefeated, and it's not Alabama. Vandy's 5-0 in this one. Alabama's 4-1. If you remember correctly, Vandy beat Alabama last year. They carried the goalpost downtown Nashville, right down. What's the main street, Kev? You've been to Nashville.
Broadway.
Broadway. They did it right down. Both of you have been there. I haven't been there. So we get this one. The spread is 10.5. Opened at 13.5, but the money's been going on Vandy. Over-under's 55 and a half last I saw. Might have gone up. Gino, who wins the big one this week? 16th ranked Vandy, 10th ranked Bama.
So I'm not sure who wins. I think Vandy will control the clock for a lot of this game. I'm not sure they're going to win, but I like the 10 and a half. Is this a 7-point game? Is this a 10-point game? It could be. I like Vandy plus the 10 and a half. You know, maybe, I don't know, 34-27. I can see this being a 7-point game, 10-point game. I think Vandy stays in this, though, with some degree. Give me Vandy plus the 10 and a half.
Kevy, where are you going?
I think, you know, very similar. I think with Alabama coming off the win against Georgia, which is much more of a game for them, could be a little bit of a letdown. Yeah, Vandy's ranked. Yeah, they're 16th, but it's Vanderbilt. And you look at the name of the uniform, and there could be that little bit of a letdown for Alabama. And I think 10 and a half, I've got the same feeling as Geno. I think this is a much closer game. Alabama's going to be out for revenge from last year. They did not like losing in Vandy. And they did not like the goalposts and all that sort of stuff. But Alabama, I hate doing it this way. I think Alabama pulls it out, but I think Vandy covers the 10 and a half.
And just and remember, last year was the same thing, Kev. Last year, coming off the Georgia victory, by the way, heading to Vandy, coming off the win against Georgia last year, too. Okay, last year, Vandy had the ball for 42 minutes. Alabama had it for 18. Okay, I mean, this was a Vandy's still top 20 in the country in ball control. Vanderbilt runs the ball really, really well. They're a top 15 team running the ball. Alabama not great against the run. Sadly, I agree with both of you boys on this one. I don't think Vandy's going to win it, but I think Diego Pavia is a pain in the ass, and I think he's the kind of clutch, gritty player that'll give them problems. The difference between this team and last year's team is that Milroe couldn't control the clock. Simpson has high enough completion percentage where they do. So Alabama can control the clock through a passing game, which is not always the way it works. Usually running teams control the clock better. But I do think Alabama finds a way to win it. But I think it's a 4-point game. I'm going to say this game's 31-27. Bama squeaks it out. I think it's going to be real close. Like you, Kev, I don't like to usually pick underdogs unless I think they're going to win, unless the spread's 20. But I think Vanderbilt's a pain in the ass. And I think that even though, listen, there's not one player on Vanderbilt that was recruited by Alabama. And if you don't think Clark Lee is telling them that, you're crazy. And that's it for the game. Gee, what other two games you like this week?
All right, my first one is Texas. I think Texas defense is way too much for Florida to handle. The spread is 6.5. It's under a touchdown. I think that this could be a 14-point game. I like Texas minus the 6.5. Kev?
I love that pick, too. I have that as one of mine. We mentioned them having a real close game last week. We think they're for real. This is a huge road test for them. I'm going to take, again, because of this 14.5, I'll take Mississippi State getting the 14.5 at Texas A&M. Texas A&M is a better team, clearly. But I think that 14.5, just again, just feels like too many points here. I think State's going to play them tight.
I could see that. I could see both of those games. I'm going to go to the Big Ten. I'm going to take Maryland plus 6.5 against Washington. This is another interesting game. Maryland's undefeated. Washington lost to Ohio State last week, as Gino predicted. They hung in for a half. I think Maryland might be the better team this week. I think that travel across country after a disappointing loss at home to Ohio State is going to put Washington a little bit lazy, and I think Maryland's going to win this game outright. I'm betting Maryland on the money line in this one. I like Maryland. G, your final one?
Okay, my final one is I'm taking Clemson minus 13.5 against North Carolina. I think they win the line of scrimmage. I think this they play well coming off their bye week. I think the talent discrepancy is way too much. Give me Clemson minus the 13.5. I saw this go to 14. I got it at 13.5, so we're going to put it at that at the moment. Kev? Sounds good.
We've mentioned I've got three other games. We've mentioned all three of them. They're off the bye week, so they've had 2 weeks to prepare. I'm going to take Miami laying the 4.5 at Florida State. Big rivalry game, but I think with the week off, Florida State coming off the loss, I'll take Miami to win and cover.
Okay. Darren?
I'm tempted to go head-to-head with you on this one, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take Michigan laying 17.5 against Wisconsin because I don't think Wisconsin's going to score. I think Michigan wins this game like 24-0, 24-3. Wisconsin's really bad. I think Fickell's the next guy out. I'm gonna take Michigan to roll in this one.
All right.
That's all.
I got two bonuses for you guys.
Okay, go for them, brother.
I think Boise State Notre Dame goes under the 62.5. And I think Miami, Florida State goes over the 54.5.
Okay.
Saw both of those games when I was looking at them. I'm 1-for-2 on these over-unders this year so far. So I'm throwing those out there this week.
Love it.
All right. Kev, what's up? What's up with hidden gems, Kev?
A few. From college, you know, Indiana's off this week. They were ranked number 8 in the AP. They may be lucky they're off this week. The 8th ranked team this year in the AP poll is 2-3.
Okay. Maybe they'll move Alabama before they lost, play again.
Alabama lost opening night to Florida State. Clemson survived against Troy. Notre Dame lost to A&M. Texas is the only team that dominated. They beat Sam Houston. And then last week was Virginia upsetting Florida State. That's been the unlucky spot there. In baseball, 1,000 pitchers have made at least 150 starts in their career. Only one can lay the claim of having more scoreless starts than losses. The retiring Clayton Kershaw. 102 scoreless starts, 96 losses.
That's wow. Awesome.
The rest of the NFL notes. We'll get to some of these games also. Packers Cowboys, as I mentioned the other night, if you're watching the game, second highest scoring tie in NFL history, 40-40, only behind the 43-43 Oakland Raiders Boston Patriots game in 1964.
And Kev, you know what 40-40 was?
It was a scorigami.
It was a scorigami.
Oh God!
Our second one this year.
Yeah, second one. Excellent.
Ravens Bills 41-40 game. After their first 126 starts, Dak Prescott, because of the tie, 77-48-1. Tony Romo was 78-48.
Wow.
They're right there.
And Matthew Stafford hitting Tutu Atwell with an 88-yard touchdown to give them the lead with less than 2 minutes left. Longest touchdown this century to give a team a lead in the last 2 minutes of a game.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. That's a good one.
So those are my hidden gems.
All right.
Without the sound effects this week.
Without the sound effects.
We're adding sound effects back next week, I promise.
All right. We'll head over to the NFL.
Okay.
Jets lose in Miami 27-21. Giants wind up winning 21-18 against the Chargers. Jackson Dart's first win. Unfortunately, in that game, Neighbors out for the year with a knee injury. I watched a lot of that game. I didn't think Dart was great, but he was good. He was 13 for 20 for 111 yards with a touchdown. He ran 10 times for 54 yards and a touchdown. My big impression was, and this is what I felt when I was watching the game, I felt like I was watching Daniel Jones in year one also, which was as soon as he thought he was in trouble, he took off. He did not follow through on his progressions. What it looked like from first glance. We'll see how he progresses. Darren, comments about the Giants?
Well, yeah, I felt the same way as you did. It wasn't like the Giants played great, but they had a little life. Dart plays with an energy that Wilson doesn't play with.
Agreed.
You know what? The O-line gave him some time in this game, which I thought was pretty good. Scadaboo is a better feature back right now than Tracy is, in the fact that He just causes more people to be a little bit more afraid of because of his running style and because of the way he breaks tackles so easily. And I do think it will help him going on. But then the Malik Nabers injury happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go back to the drawing board, and now you're going back to Wandale Robinson and Darius Slayton, who are fine number three receivers, maybe two and three receivers, but neither one is a one. But the Giants got a little life, and it was nice to see. The Chargers, by the way, they lose Joe Alt.
That was huge.
And their offensive line looked horrendous in this game. I thought Herbert was running for his life pretty much throughout. You know, there's only so much he could do. I mean, but congrats to the Giants. It was nice to see them get off the snide. They have a little excitement going on in Big Blue Land. And let's see if they can ride the momentum. They play a winnable road game this week against the Saints. We'll see how that comes out. We'll talk about that as we get into it.
All right.
Yeah, I thought, you know, like you said, the difference. I think if it was Jameis Winston, there would have been more excitement than Russell Wilson.
Probably.
But that's just a potential 30-30. But, you know, Dart's got the energy. He's got cockiness. That we saw that in Ole Miss. We've seen that carry over in the NFL. He's cocky back there. And I think that came through with his play.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree also. All right, then we go to the other New York team. Jets lose 27-21 in Miami. In this game, Tyreek Hill out for the season with a dislocated knee. Another big receiver gone. Jets, I thought, tried to come back in the fourth quarter. Kev, let's talk about the Jets.
Breece Hall's comment after the game summed it up perfectly. When the other team shoots themselves in the foot, we come back and shoot ourselves in the head. And I think that's a perfect way of summing it up. I mean, you know, the defense, another poor game for the defense. I thought Miami was able to move the ball pretty easily against them. I was surprised there's only 27 points, to be honest. You know, we give up the field goal drive, come down. I mean, Darren, have you ever seen a better ball control, run down your throat type of drive than the Jets put together on the first drive?
Yeah, the only big problem, it was awesome. The only problem was is that at a certain point, you got to just ride Breece. He's the best guy. And yeah. I'm not criticizing the fumble by Allen. Listen, I know you have to mix him up a little bit, but I just don't understand what the split in the carries is. Breece is the number one guy. He should be getting the carries. But I love the way they came out. Fields running when he had to. It was impressive. Yep.
And then Allen, as he's diving for the end zone, gets the ball punched out, and we come away scoreless. Right before the half, Falk gets one from 58, because apparently anything from 55 and out is still easy by any NFL kicker, even a 40-year-old Nick Falk.
What a gut. You got to love Nick Falk. He's got a gut through the jersey. You got to love that.
And so, okay, you know, 10-3, a little momentum. We get the ball start the second half, and Williams decides to fumble the kickoff. Miami recovers 17-3. A couple of touchdown drives late. But, you know, the problem was a couple of things. The defense first forced no turnovers again. That's four straight weeks without forcing a turnover. The three turnovers in total, the three fumbles. The 13 penalties for 101 yards against the Jets. And here's where I'm going to bitch and moan. Out of the 13 penalties, I agree with 12 of them. The offensive pass interference against Garrett Wilson was bullshit, plain and simple.
It happens every week in every game.
And there was at least one clear cut, a second one they could have called where Justin Fields gets hit out of bounds, gets tackled out of bounds, no calls. And then Ruckert, right before the two-minute warning, he gets tackled, he's down. 2 seconds later, here comes a guy delivering the elbow drop that would have made Randy Savage proud. And no call. I mean, the Jets, I mean, like I said, this is not to take away the fact that the Jets were sloppy. The Jets deserved 12 of the 13 penalties that were called against them. But how about even it up a little bit and be fair? That's what we're asking for. Be consistent. The Jets deserve as many of these penalties as the other as they make, and they get no respect from any official all year. And it's just bull. And like I said, this is not the reason they lost. They committed three turnovers. They committed 12 penalties. I agree with the 12 penalties that were called. It's not like they weren't penalties, except for the Garrett Wilson. But come on. Got to call it both ways. Got to be fair.
And Garrett's a star. He deserves the credit. I mean, and you saw the catches he makes.
Yeah.
I mean, they all know they're going to this guy. They don't even cover anybody else. And he's still making plays.
I mean, at least Mason Taylor had a little bit of a coming out game here. He played real well, too. Darren, your thoughts on the game overall?
The defense sucks. Okay. Jarvis Brownlee can't start soon enough.
Yeah.
And he's a guy with a holding problem in Tennessee, by the way. He holds. We're gonna see both cornerbacks hold. It's gonna be a blast. McDonald can't get pressure at all by himself. Without Jermaine Johnson, there's nothing there. The other backup ends don't do a goddamn thing. The offense has limitations, but that's not why they're losing the games. They're losing the games because of turnovers, penalties, and because the defense can't get a stop at all in any kind of spot. And that's the problem. They need someone on the other side of Sauce. I know people wanted to rip on Sauce for the play by Waller. I thought that was an amazing pass by Tua. You know, Waller's 6'6". I don't know what he's supposed to do. All you can do is sit there, wait for him to catch it, and try to drive him out of bounds.
And that's what he tried to do.
And he just didn't have the strength to do it. I mean, Waller's a bigger guy. Yeah. Tua played all right. It's like the Jets have never seen a play action rollout. It's like it was open all game.
The naked bootleg.
Take the handoff, roll left. Like he's never going to roll to his power side. It's like, what in the – I don't know. I can't watch a Hicks defense anymore. I just can't do it. They're not prepared. They're not prepared. Who's the D coordinator? Why am I blanking on his name?
Wilkes.
Wilkes. It's Wilkes. I knew I was wrong. Wilkes. I can't watch Wilkes' defense anymore. They play too much zone and on third down where they line up behind the sticks. They sit there. They don't get any pressure, but we don't blitz anybody. The loss of Quincy Williams just kills you because you have no speed to chase anybody down and to blitz with. And the safeties suck. I need to see Malachi Moore. Move Stevens to safety. You know, fine. Play him out there. At least he can tackle. He can't cover. And that's the problem with this team. This team, Fields can't throw. He won't throw the ball down the field. I get it. We get 5 yards of the clip. But if we run the ball, it doesn't matter. And you want to laugh? First thing I see when they come out of the game, I see Mitchell. And I'm like, what the hell is Mitchell doing out there? Who the hell's not? I was going nuts. And all of a sudden, they're like, the Jets start with 6 down linemen. I'm like, all right, calm down.
All right.
I was like, all right, good. And they just ran it down their throats. But not enough Breece Hall touches either, and that was the problem. I could go on rambling all night, Gino. Take it back.
All right.
But, you know, for me, you mentioned the defense in the secondary. You know, Tony Adams needs to be taken out of the lineup,
Malachi
too.
I mean, every day. I don't want to see Tony Adams again.
That lack of tackle line, Achane's touchdown.
He sucks.
I mean, it's like he didn't even try. He got close and said, nah.
He's too fast for me.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are go around the rest of the NFL. We're down to 2-4-0 teams at the moment. Buffalo beat New Orleans 31-19. Philadelphia took care of Tampa Bay 31-25. Barkley on a fake tush push. Other scores. Seattle beat Arizona 23-20. Myers a 52-yard field goal on the final play to give them the win. Darren, you were all over Seattle.
I like this team. I like their defense. Marvin Harrison, though, Jr., started catching the ball in the second half. We're going to see if this propels him. For you fantasy guys that drafted Marvin Harrison in the second or third round, he started to come on. Let's see what happens.
Kansas City beat Baltimore 37-20.
Yeah, this was
Lamar got hurt, obviously. Mahomes threw 4 touchdowns. Darren?
The thing about this, the Chiefs looked really good in this game, and Baltimore looked really bad. And the thing is, Baltimore's defense just is not Baltimore's defense anymore. Everybody looks slow. You can run on them. It's not to take away Mahomes. Mahomes looked pretty good, and getting one extra weapon back meant a big deal for that team. But, this is the worst Ravens team I've seen in a while. And, you don't like to see Lamar not playing. He's been getting hit a lot this year. And that's what you have when you have a running quarterback. They're going to eventually get hurt.
Yeah. Green Bay and Dallas, we mentioned before, tied 40-all. Crazy scoring. Balls flying all over the place. Kev, you had a point.
And then Green Bay almost screwed it up at the end.
That's exactly where I was going. Go ahead.
I mean, no timeouts left. You know, they get the completion, and, you know, the 22 seconds left and the play was over. And there's Love making this motion. I don't know if it was calling for a huddle or if he's putting those hands together, almost lining up for the Polish Ivan put the Polish hammer move. And also after the clock ticked down and tick, tick, tick. And they're lucky when the ball got hit that it dropped straight down to stop the clock at one. If there was any sort of deflection or went up in the air before coming down, the game's over.
Yeah.
2 seconds left and they're taking their time.
I don't know. I was thinking the same thing, Kev. It was crazy stuff, man.
I thought LaFleur was a good coach and it felt like a Jets operation there. Watching the play clock tick, 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 tick. I mean, just unbelievable.
All right. The other game I had was Jacksonville beat San Francisco 26-21. Jacksonville had a punt return for a touchdown in the game. They also got four turnovers from San Francisco to get the win. Jacksonville looks good. I like that pick. I had that pick. They're 3-1, tied with Indy at 3-1 in the AFC South. The other two teams in that division right now, Houston at 1-3 and Tennessee at 0-4. So, Darren?
This more interesting after the game, where Liam Cohen went up to Robert Saleh after the game saying, "Keep my name out of your mouth," which is the new catchphrase for everybody. And Robert Saleh basically cursed at him saying, "I was complimenting you. I'll effing end you. I will effing end you." And it wouldn't really be much of a fight if you've seen Leon Cohen and you see how cut and Jack Robert Saleh is. But Saleh apologized the next day. He goes, I probably used the wrong choice of words.
Yeah.
But basically, all he was trying to say is that he puts his players in the right position. They find a way. He did say that they're great at sign stealing to an extent. And he did say that. But they do it legally. He kept saying it was legal. He wasn't trying to rip the guy. But Liam Cohen acted like a petulant child about it. And then Robert Saleh lost his mind. And as the Jet coach, he never showed any emotion. But as a defensive coordinator, he's very fired up. Kev?
Yeah, I thought it was very much, you know, like you said, complimentary about being able to steal signs. Not in a legal way, not in a cheating way. They're able to pick something up and figure something out.
Okay. It was interesting, but that's kind of how that one went.
And my last game to touch on, Rams beat Indianapolis 27-20. We mentioned Atwell had an 88-yard TD. Huge play in this game was Adonai Mitchell running into the end zone, putting the ball out and dropping the ball as he crossed the end zone. Ball got fumbled out the back of the end zone, and it cost Indy 7 points right there. So,
little different than playing the other idiots that just drop it before they score. He was actually just switching hands with it, trying to be funny, and just lost it and fumbled it out of the back of the end zone. Colts were actually probably the better team for most of this game, if you watched it. And then they had the blown coverage on the 88-yard play. Nobody picked up Atwell. They just didn't pick him up. And not a typical Lou Anarumo defense. And for everyone that was sitting there saying, "Well, I have the Colts plus 3.5, and the cover looks pretty safe." No, it isn't. And there you go. They lose by 7.
Any other games to touch on?
No, I think you covered the big ones. You have one, KG? Kev?
Yeah, the Bears beating the Raiders 25-24. Another late block field goal.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, last week we had 4 of them in the fourth quarter. Here's another game of the fourth quarter field goal block.
And now apparently Ashton Gentry stands up taller, which is why he's running back. I don't know. Whatever. Changed his stance back to his college stance.
There you go.
I have no idea what that means.
All right. Gino's got 3 games for the King's Ransom bets this week. So my first parlay is going to be a 2-leg parlay. Take the Philadelphia Eagles minus the 3.5 and Barkley to score a touchdown at plus 160. My second one's going to be a 3-leg parlay plus 750. Take Arizona minus the 6.5. Harrison, Darren mentioned him, to score a touchdown. McBride to score a touchdown. They're playing Tennessee this week. I think they put up a lot of points. That's plus 750. And the last one is going to be plus 230. It's Detroit minus 9.5 and Seattle minus the 3. Those are the 3 bets for the King's Ransom this week. We're going to go into any other NFL points before we go into picks, guys?
I think we're going to Ryder Cup before we go into picks.
Oh, let's go to Ryder Cup.
Absolutely.
I think the NFL, you know, just a couple of things. One, the 49ers have announced Purdy and Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall are out, to go along with, you know, previously mentioned Brandon Ayuk and Nick Bosa. They've got nobody to play Thursday night. It's going to be the entire offense is Christian McCaffrey. That's all they have. And the Browns are now starting Dylan Gabriel this week. They're going to bench Flacco and go with the rookie Gabriel, try to get a spark for them, I guess. You know, you look at that AFC North between Borrego now with the injury, Flacco getting benched, Jackson's hurt. You know, we don't know his status for this week yet. The last guy standing is Aaron Rodgers. So that's those.
Okay, let's head into a little Ryder Cup.
Hey, listen, the Ryder Cup, a lot to talk about, mostly with the fans. Listen, leave it to New York and Long Island to really kind of kick it up a notch. You know, the Americans come out playing poorly. These guys are getting licked up. They spend a ton of money, and they start really being harassing. Now, you could sit there and say, hey, listen, you know, there's a 18-year-old college kid that has to kick a field goal with people cursing at him, and a 18-year-old college kid that has to, you know, hit a foul shot with people yelling at him. But this is golf, as Shooter McGavin once said. And, you know, there is a decorum to it. And while Rory should not also be cursing back, I, you know, at a certain point, you know, you got to be under control a little bit. And you know, it's a little embarrassing to be the New York crowd, our crowd, that has to act like a bunch of idiots during this tournament, in my opinion. At the same point in time, you want to see emotion, you want to see excitement. Just don't do it when the guy's in his backswing. And don't say anything about his wife, or don't spill a drink on his wife. Outside of that, I can live with the rest of it. You want to say, well, he's walking, F you, Rory, knock yourself out. But when he's in his backswing, don't make any noise. Let the guy freaking hit the golf ball.
So the guy's a golf ball. you're right. That's sort of one interesting explanation. You know, the tickets were $750 per day. Or something like that, right?
And they actually ended up getting that higher. People were getting them cheaper than $1,200 by the tournament start.
Yeah. So you priced out the average guy like us for the rich people, and they're probably letting the rich is letting their 20-year-old son in there.
Yeah.
Because they can afford it. And these 20-year-old sons of rich people have no freaking idea of what to do. Never get in trouble in anything. And they drank and act rowdy, and that was it. If they had lower ticket prices, there would have been more average fans like us who would have been there.
Getting rowdy.
Proper.
Rowdy.
We would have been cheering, but we wouldn't have been insulting any golfers that we were walking by. We would have been still excited. I have a few comments to make about some of the golfers, but I don't think I would have harassed anybody in that backswing, and I don't think you would have either, G.
We'd be yelling, we'd be chanting USA, maybe give it a few Rory here or there, but like you said, in a little. We wouldn't be attacking Rory and his wife. We wouldn't be talking in backswings and yelling in backswings and all that. That's beyond golf etiquette.
Couple of quick things. Air Force One landed right next to my building. I was able to watch it land from my job. That was kind of fun to watch. A couple of the guys I work with were on the roof. You know, the Secret Service had a question. And then they came back on Monday, questioned them again, by the way. first 2 days were brutal. And Kev actually texted me, and I wasn't watching as much early on as you were. Kevin sent us a text saying, "This is embarrassing." That's all it was. It was three words. This is embarrassing. None of us even responded because it just was, Kev, right? They were just getting their ass kicked. And then, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, unfortunately, my bold prediction was looking real good until Sunday. I said it was going to be Europe pretty easy. Wow, it was just like it was not competitive. I mean, you start off just the scores Friday morning. It was 3-1 Europe and foursomes, and the three matches Europe won were 4-3, 5-3, and 5-4. That sets the tone, and it never got any better from there. And any of the foursomes or four ball matches Thursday and Friday,
Sheffield never looked good at all in the entire tournament. No. And the number one player in the world looked awful in this, and then we get to Sunday, and all of a sudden, now I have the two TVs going. I have you Ryder Cup on one with the volume, and I'm watching the football red zone on the other because there's no Jets till Monday. And all of a sudden, Cam Young beats Justin Rose, right? And you're like, one up. He came back. Justin Thomas comes back from two down to beat Fleetwood, who had been playing amazing the whole tournament. DeChambeau's five back, comes back to have it. And with such emotion, he's in tears talking about how much he loves playing for his country.
That was five down through seven, I think.
Early. And he stormed back. Scheffler beats Rory in the match with one versus two, where neither one of them played well. There was probably the worst match of all of the 11 matches. And we'll get into why there was 11 matches in a second. Oberg beats Cantley 2-1. Oberg was hitting spots. Cantley couldn't hit the putt that he needed to. Schauffele crushes Rahm, crushed him 4-3. Spawn comes back and beats Straka. He had the lead, gave it up, got it back. Then the turning point. Henley had a chance to put Lowry away on 17 and missed a makeable putt.
Yep.
Henley had a chance to put Lowry away on 18 and missed a makeable putt. And listen, I'm not trying to pick on Shane Lowry. I'm sure it's an emotional moment. But he acted like he did something. The guy gave you the match. You didn't fucking take it. Shut the fuck up when you're crying about how emotional this is. You got to be kidding me. Henley gave you the match. You didn't take shit. And I was fed up. I was like, "What? Am I the only one watching the matches? What's going on here?" But you know what? Henley had a chance. He's number four in the world, and he couldn't put him away. They couldn't hit a putt.
Yep.
And then after that, I mean, Griffin beat Hogarth and Morikawa and Hatton tied when Morikawa had the lead, gave it up. Burns had the lead on McIntyre. They tied. And, of course, Hovland withdraws, and because of a 1971 rule, you have to put your player's name in an envelope, and that player doesn't play, and you have it. I think we're going to get to the point based off this, probably because it was close. If it would have been determining it would have definitely happened, where they're going to have a 13th alternate at some point just in case somebody gets injured. I think they're going to have to go that way more than doing the half. But
not
listen, it's the rule. They follow the rule. There's nothing you can really do about it. But the crucial thing was watching Henley miss those two putts because they had a real chance there. The momentum had completely switched. And you don't know what happens with the extra pressure on the back end of those matches with guys like Hatton and guys like McIntyre knowing that they have to get the point. So, again, well, it ends up 15-13.
I mean, once you got to, you know, you knew that you had the half with Hovland, you got the one with Oberg, and the half by Lowry was one that gave you retaining the Ryder Cup.
Yep.
That if Henley holds that one off, you know, they're still stuck at 13.5 and still up for grabs, and you never know.
And then, you know, then you had the two ties with Morikawa and Burns, and they might play him different to try to win him. You don't know because it's over. But listen, the Americans had a really nice comeback in this. Keegan Bradley set up this course like a freaking idiot. He set it up where there was no rough. He made the course easy. Yeah. Europe putts better than we do. I don't know why people don't realize, but just watch the way the Europeans grow up. There are no trees. There's no anything. They're putting from 90 feet. On these freaking fairways in England and Ireland and Scotland. There's none of this stuff. They're playing links courses. They putt. Keegan played it because he was like, we hit it longer. So just in case we hit it off center, we're going to have better second shots in. You got to make it more difficult than they made it. And Keegan Bradley really kind of screwed this up. I'm not going to blame him completely on everything that went wrong. The matchup pairings were awful in the first half. He said he actually put the 132nd best possible combination out of 132 twice. He played them back-to-back days and they got smoked twice. What was it, Morikawa and
English, right?
English.
What? I mean, so obviously the Boone analytics didn't get to him. But Jesus Christ. Again, it was interesting. They made it fun on Sunday, but the first 2 days were just awful, boys. Any comments?
No, you know, like I said, Great comeback. I thought it was going to be a blowout on Sunday. And boy, the U.S. really showed their mettle. They're better individually. They always are better on Sundays of Ryder Cup. For some reason, they just don't play well together. And sometimes when you see, you know, when you see Fleetwood out there winning earlier and you see Rose and McIlroy and Lowry, they all seem to have a friendship.
Yep.
And a camaraderie that the U.S. players just don't seem to have. You have a couple here or there. But I think when you play the foursomes and four balls, I think that helps a lot.
I think you're right.
And they need to do a better job next year with in Rome with captain's pick. Is it Rome? No, Rome was last time.
Rome was last time.
Yep. Like I say, you can't put the 132nd best possible pairing together and have it play back-to-back. And even they were saying, you know, basically odd holes were for the long hitters, even holes were for the shorter hitters, but they had Schauffele playing the even holes the first day and his partner playing the odd holes and all. I mean, Bradley just didn't know what he was doing.
No, he was overmatched and, you know, set up the course badly, set up the matchups badly. Scheffler didn't show up.
Yeah.
DeChambeau, it wasn't great, but he played with such emotion. You like it. And it just seemed like the European players play with more emotion than most of the Americans. Yep. I mean, you sit there and there's certain guys that stand out to you that play with emotion. Justin Thomas was really emotional. He was fun to watch. But you're missing guys like Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth and guys that play with that little fire that, you know, Colin Morikawa just doesn't have it in him. And Harris English just isn't the guy. And Ben Griffin just isn't going to get it done, even though they didn't really play him. He looked good when he played. They just didn't play him. DeChambeau was and Thomas were the only two guys that really carried the emotion. And I thought all of Europe showed a ton of emotion. Maybe not Hogard, but everybody else seemed like they were all fired up the whole time. And I thought it was pretty. I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yep.
Okay.
Guys, just one quick point. Then I'm going to go into a couple of lost treasures. Then we'll do the picks if that works for you guys.
Go Walter for it.
Colton, okay, the all-time leading scorer at the University of Syracuse passed away this week at 53. During the heyday of college basketball, during the Big East heyday, we saw Lawrence Moulton play. We saw him on those great Syracuse Boeheim teams. Really, he's just a phenomenal player. And again, he goes down to Syracuse's all-time leading scorer. That's how quality and talented he was.
Wow.
Died way too young, 53 years old, born a year after we were, born in 1972. A couple of hidden, buried treasures for you guys from the Kings today, okay? Interesting one. 1992, George Brett gets his 3,000th career hit against Tim Fortuna of the Angels. He was picked off on first base on the very next play. Nolan Ryan's first ever no-hitter was May 15th, 1973 for the California Angels. Bobby Valentine playing center field. When Ryan threw his sixth and seventh no-hitters, Bobby Valentine was his manager. Valentine is 3 years older than Nolan Ryan. This one is one of my favorites. And I have two more baseball, and then one more baseball, and then I have a boxing one for you that I think Gino is going to find really interesting. Okay, first we're going to go in late September of 1982, and this one's for you, Kev, because you love how pitchers just don't have heart anymore. Pete Vukovic was pitching with a torn rotator cuff. He was throwing in a shitload of pain, but the Brewers were in a pennant race. So he got a cortisone shot. 2 days later, he threw 11 innings and 173 pitches to beat the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, my God. A freaking
stud horse, okay? And if you don't know who Pete Vukovic is, watch Major League. Gino, this one's for you. Lucchese associate Parnell Steven Stax Edwards, okay? You remember Stax from the movie. For a while, he worked as Muhammad Ali's bodyguard before he got killed in that Lucchese Lufthansa heist. He was
his
bodyguard. He followed him around the hotel, asked to be his bodyguard. Muhammad hired him for four fights after that were in the garden area, but he was a bodyguard. Wow. And that's kind of what I got. So that's all I got for the buried treasures. I thought they were interesting. And now let's go back to you, Jay.
All right, let's go to NFL picks. Excuse me. Darren is on fire at the moment. 10-2 for the first 12. Gino's at 8-4. Kevin 4-8. He'll turn it around though. He always does. Darren,
the other way, by the way. Kevin,
it is the other way. Darren, 10-2. You have the tee box. Where would you like to go to start the NFL picks for Week 5?
Okay, I'm going to take the layup. The Rams are laying 7.5 at home. San Francisco has too many injuries. I'm taking the Rams. I think it is beat them. I think they should beat them convincingly.
It is now 8.5, by the way.
Okay, it went up. It was 6.5 yesterday.
I know. Kev, where are you going?
Colts at home, laying 6.5 against the Raiders. Geno Smith does not look good at all. I'll take the Colts laying 6.5.
I like that, by the way. it was out there for me. I think I'll take the other layup. I'm going to take Arizona. -7.5 against the Titans. I think Titans just aren't there yet. Cam Ward's trying. He's trying to get things organized out over there. Arizona's got too much going on right now. Give me the Cardinals -7.5. Darren?
Jets +2.5 against the Cowboys. They went out right. Jets are 1-4 after this week.
Oof. Ooh. Okay. Kev?
I can't believe this is a Sunday night game. Patriots to Bills. I got Bills -7.5. I'll take the Bills to cover.
8.5.
8.5, whatever.
if that is not a two-score game, I don't know what is. Okay.
As long as it's under 10.
As long as it's not two field goals. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. My second game, Darren, you've been on them all year. You kind of got me going with them.
I love this team now.
I do. I do. You know what? I think they come out and they play good defense. Darnold is getting it done offensively. Jaxon Smith-Njigba seems to be everywhere every time he has the ball. I'm going to take the Seahawks -3.5 at home against a good Tampa Bay squad. Godwin's back. Egbuka now looks like he's taking over the number one role for the time being. Darren, where are you going for game number three?
I'm going to go to Europe. I'm going to take the Vikings laying the 4.5 after they get to stay out there for two straight weeks against the Browns. Dylan Gabriel may not be ready for prime time against that pass rush. And Minnesota doesn't run the ball great, but Cleveland is better against the run than they are against the pass. I think Jefferson will find his way open. I think Addison will find his way open. I think they win by a touchdown. I think they come back after the disappointment against Pittsburgh. I'm going to take the Vikings.
Okay. Kev, game number three.
Do I go heads up with one of you? Yeah. You know what? They've lived a charmed life so far. They keep the games close. I'm going to take the Buccos getting the 3.5 against Seattle. I'm going to go heads up with Gino.
Okay. All right. And my third pick, I'm going Monday night. I think this is the Jacksonville statement game. They're getting 3.5 at home. Listen, Kansas City's coming off a big win against Baltimore last week. I can see a little letdown from them. Mahomes threw 4 touchdowns last week. I think Jacksonville comes out fired up. When was the last time Jacksonville started the year 3-1? Give me Jacksonville plus the 3.5 at home against the Chiefs.
I think that has a good shot of happening too.
And those are the picks for week 5 of the NFL season. Darren?
Any last points before we wrap up, gentlemen? We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the Yankees win a playoff game and Cashman and Boone are still the biggest idiots on this damn show. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get the podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. Also, we're posting a ton on social. Like it. Stop calling me a spammer, but like it, share it, comment on it, and just be part of our team. We want more people. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.